Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Hello, hello. How is everybody doing today? Last day of DevCon. We are super excited to be here talking to you about building resilient teams, navigating the Web3 ecosystem. And we have three incredible speakers today. Our first panelist, we have Evan McMullen. She's a visionary in the Web3 space with such a robust background in both blockchain and enterprise tech. She's the co-founder of Privado ID, where they're focusing on transforming identity verification across digital and real-world environments, and she was previously the founder of Disco.xyz. With leadership experience at Berkshire Hathaway and Consensus, Evan has really been at the forefront of advancing decentralized identity and data solutions. And fun fact, Evan and I met while we were students at Yale University, and here we are years later together. and our next guest, we have Rachel. And Rachel's been working in the blockchain space for years. As a founder, best-selling author, and global public speaker, she's really passionate about sharing knowledge and building community. She has been very active with the Base and Coinbase ecosystems, founding On-Chain Media, where she runs a podcast and Twitter spaces, and she's co-founded incentives with Per Labs with Mr. Miggles on Base team. And additionally, she works with the city of Berkeley to promote blockchain use cases at a municipal level. And our final panelist, Olivia Smith, is the COO of Moonsong Labs, where she directs operational strategy and scales a company's impact in Web3 innovation. She was formerly the VP of strategy at PureStake, where she played a key role in launching Moonbeam. And she also has a background in finance, having spent 4 years in TradFi, prior to blockchain, and she also holds a joint JD MBA from Columbia University. So welcome to these panelists. Why don't we kick it off with, you know, let's start simple. To each of you in a sentence, what does resilience mean?
I think of resilience both in a very sort of literal technical sense, as well as the human sense, the ability to withstand friction, disruption, to maintain integrity, and to maintain process and success despite shifting conditions around you.
When I think of resilience, I don't know, I was doing a Twitter space with this MMA fighter who was talking about, you know, getting knocked down repeatedly over and over, and I feel like in our space, we are really fighting this good fight for the greater good, and after getting knocked down time and time again, I think resilience is, you know, the ability to pick yourself back up and realize, okay, we are working towards a greater good, and this is a fight worth fighting. So I think it's just getting up, you know, and if you get knocked down, just get up and keep trying. I feel like that's resilience.
I like that image of just keep getting up. For me, it's like, you know, it's obviously persistence, but it's this like mental fortitude. I think when I think of it, it's like as simple as being able to sustain so you can succeed. And so it's something that's consistent, that's always there, that you have to keep cultivating, but is key to success.
So looking at these definitions that you all just provided, how do you instill these sort of core values of resilience that you just defined within your teams?
So the only thing that is certain about the blockchain industry is that we can guarantee uncertainty. I'm sure that all of you here have experienced various different swings of market cycles, introductions of new political influences, social influences that change the dynamics in which we operate every day, both from our, you know, technical resilience and the challenges of new adoption or new capabilities or even errors that we find along the way, as well as the human beings coordinating these systems who need to be able to accommodate themselves. At Privado ID, in our practice, we have an incredibly diverse team. our teammates, you know, represent nations across the world, as well as backgrounds that are incredibly diverse, from more traditional to pretty degenerate. And it is through that range of experiences and perspectives that I think we find resiliency and strength. The opportunity to invite points of view that might not occur to you. In fact, the invitation to disagree rigorously and respectfully, you know, raising one's voice because you love your users is never a bad thing on my team. And so I think that through open communication, deep consideration for what success looks like, and a shared understanding that the ground under us will always shift, these principles, you know, this way of being has been working so far. But of course, as I say, with all technologies and all processes, we will work for as long as this serves us, and when we find something else, we will do that instead.
Mic drop. So I feel like what creates a resilient team in my eyes is, I don't know, I'm a big proponent of really understanding your why and the purpose behind what you're doing. When you have a strong enough why, you figure out the how. And the teams that I've seen make the most waves and make the most progress, they're tapped into this greater mission and greater purpose. And they just do it with such conviction, like Evan here, you know, just constantly showing up and realizing, okay, what we're doing is so important for the greater good. What we're doing is, you know, what I'm doing is aligned with my purpose every day. And I think that excitement and that joy to be a part of this positive change globally, I think is what is behind the energy of resilience.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, Evan, what you spoke to is this like psychological safety in a work environment, being able to speak up, being able to have debate. I think that's crucial to a part of a culture. I think it really comes down to people and purpose. And you talked about that, of like, you have to have a greater good that you're solving for. And you have to give people purpose for the work that they do day in and day out. And then I think a key part is you've got to invest in people. And people, investment is not just paying them. I think that's really key. It's recognition and appreciation, and not just accepting work, but actually talking about all the work they put into it, talking about what they learn from it. And I think, you know, to add to the psychological safety that you mentioned, Evan, I think there's this aspect that everything should be a learning opportunity. The long-term purpose of what you're building for, but then you also want to have like a personal purpose of, I am developing myself. And as a leader, you want to invest in that. Bringing in outside speakers, investing in them learning stuff that's not even just like related to their direct work, but cross-cutting across the company. I think a lot of times we get really focused and siloed on our direct work, and we don't realize that people can learn a ton from, whether it's the marketing department, the business development department. There's just a lot that we can take advantage of. So investing in people, I think, is the key to resilience.
Can I add one thing there? Okay, so another big component that I was just thinking of, and I feel like Evan has always understood this, but it's also having fun. I went to Doge Day in Tokyo recently in Japan, and you know they were actually honoring the life of a big community member in the Doge community named Julia Love. And a quote from her is, if it's not fun, it's not sustainable. So I feel like, you know, we're seeing the rise of all these meme communities, and people are realizing, okay, this is fun. We can rally around this and celebrate community. So I feel like fun is a big component too, being connected to a greater purpose and having fun. And Evan's always got that. She's got a disco ball on stage with us right now.
Head of fun. So, you know, I think that a lot of things like this with like resiliency, there's sort of these kind of higher level, almost like philosophical questions of how we approach this and discussions about this. But if you were to like measure resilience and look at metrics, as we're in a very metric driven industry, like what would you say are some things that you could look at for that?
Burnout, attrition, uptime, transactions per second.
Mic drop.
No, but like for real though, you know, when we talk about sort of metrics, like it's a challenging thing to try to apply across the board, because every team is different, every human experience is different. But what I can tell in terms of measuring the health and resilience of our community is that the number of chairs in this room far exceeds the number of chairs in the room in 2018 in Prague at DevCon, when I first learned about the work of my now co-founders, the Iden3 protocol. The, you know, ecosystem around us has scaled significantly, such that there are a lot of new faces and many that remain. But whether it's through, you know, the difficulty of the work that we do, the pressure of the dynamics and constantly changing ecosystem, it's a challenging place for everyone to build resilience, for every team to persist. And so through the natural emergent progress of, Ethereum, I think it is organic that not everything will stay the same. And in fact, the ability to adapt and change and to jettison what no longer serves us, I think is part of what makes that resilience possible. I know I am definitely guilty of hanging on to some ideas for a little too long, even when it was clear that they may no longer be viable, whether that's a signature scheme or a particular way, like state channels. I thought that was gonna happen. Turns out we went with layer twos. So the ability to receive that new information and iterate, I think, is also important in the ways that we measure who's here and how it's working.
So I think team by team, it's going to be, the metrics are going to be individual to what the purpose is. But I think kind of a universal metric that we can look at is how long these teams are lasting, how long the individuals are showing up, how long they're staying in the ring after all of these market cycles going up and down. How long are they showing up? People like Evan, people like these women on stage today have been in this space for years, grinding and not stopping. And to me, that is a key benchmark of resilience. It's continuing to show up over the long term, seeing the bigger picture. During the bear markets, we lose so many people, right? And I feel like that's, kind of the opposite of resiliency. These women up here see the long-term vision, have continued to show up over the years, and I think that's a universal metric that we can look at.
Yeah, I agree with both of those things. I think for me, attrition, seeing like if you survive a bear market, obviously those are tests of resilience. But in some ways, those are like you've already lost the battle, right? Like you build resilience actually in the bull. It's opposite of like building software in the bear. Like this is the time to build resilience because the bear market tests resilience. And I think when you have lots of attrition, you're already kind of losing that resilience battle. For me, it's, part of a key part of developing resilience is developing with your team, your company's core values, and linking behavior to that. So when we talk about how to measure resilience, for me, it's one, just the behavior of your team on a day-to-day basis. Are you able in your team meetings to call out how people's actions are directly tied to your values? I think the other part of it is, ironically, I think you should look at how many failures you've had in a risk-controlled environment and what's happened from those failures. Because the key part of resilience, as you said, is like being able to get knocked down and get back up. And you don't want to have it be that like it's when you have a concussion and you can't get back up, right? Like, you want it to be when it's a risk-controlled environment where someone has been given ownership of something. They haven't done it quite right, but they're in an environment, Evan, to what you said before, that they can learn from it. They're not fired right away, and they can become more resilient.
One thing that I want to note, too, like just in thinking about the process of like how one cultivates resilience, as you were noting in practice, I think the same is true for the ossification hardening of our code and smart contracts, as well as the processes that we have internally on our teams. Right, the reason that we trust certain contracts, the reason that we trust certain projects is because of the volume of capital that they have supported over time, the consistency of their security, and that is proven first through audits, but then really through volume and consistency over time. And I think the same is true in our internal team practices and even how we work with one another in this composable ecosystem that demands modular teams interface constantly. Defining the processes that work, getting a gut check from the other parties involved, whether that's a formal audit for code or whether feedback for your colleagues, and then over time, repeating that process, adding more value that's supported by it, ossifying that social code, as it were.
So you sort of jumped slightly into my next question, but I think that when we talk about Web3, resilience is mentioned so often, and so how does Web3 vary in resilience from other industries? And obviously we've touched on some of these topics, but I wanted to just get a little bit more specific here and see if there's anything that you think you missed on that of like, what do you think that, Web3 can learn from, your experiences in the past from other industries and what's different? Would you say that resilience in Web3 is drastically different from other industries?
Y'all, we need some boundaries up in here. I definitely think the demands of a 24/7 market that is emergent at every edge.
With constant communication, with global time zones, like this industry is 24/7, not just the markets.
Which invites the most spectacular opportunity for every minute throughout the day to be, an act of continued progress, and for the permissionless nature of our ecosystem to invite everyone on Earth and in space with an internet connection to contribute. But what this can look like is very different than more formal structures, where the relationship between you and your work, the relationship between you and your colleagues, has been ossified in its own way by different processes. I think the choose your own adventure, way of being in spaces such as DevCon and the Ethereum ecosystem offers the tyranny of structurelessness, where it is very easy to forego your own boundaries in service of the chain. I certainly know that I do not get enough sleep and I'm not hydrating enough this week in service of our work, but that type of constant opportunity for engagement, that 24/7 on-ramp and opportunity to participate, is both a gift and a curse. And I think that the way we require resilience to be self-guided, just like the shape of how we participate in this ecosystem, is different than these more traditional and former structures where there's a much more clear separation in between what one might call work.
Yeah, my answer, mic drop again, by the way. So I would say, to Evan's point, is this space is always on, right? There's always messages in Telegram, Discord, things happening around the world, because we are a part of this borderless global on-chain community. And I think that's a very beautiful thing. I've also seen the other side of the coin where it's very easy to burn out. I mean, you should see some of our calendars up here. They're pretty crazy, because I think that comes from the excitement and the passion and the purpose behind what we're doing. It makes us want to show up and put 110% in, because we realize the significance of the work that we're doing. So I think something that other industries can learn, and what lessons I've learned working in Web3 and in the on-chain space, is you really have to master the art of time management, figuring out where your time is best spent, and really mastering that, because it's easy to get sucked into like a ton of rabbit holes, because our space is always on. There's always exciting things happening. But yeah, I'd say the other side of that, the positive side, is that, this is like a global celebration. I feel like so many people are excited about this industry, and we get to be at events like DevCon and conferences all the time. So yeah, I'd say I really love the excitement piece of it, but it's really important to master your time in the space.
Yeah, I agree with both of those things. I think for me, and we've talked about it, is that Web3, you have this much bigger mission that we're on, and we don't really know what the end will look like, right? And so there's so much untapped potential that we need to harness and drive people and give people that purpose. But I also think, as you said, I started my career off in investment banking. I actually probably worked just as much. There's no creativity, though, I would say. Probably better bankers have more creativity than I did. But I think this industry, you can be creative, and you can try to figure out what the best way forward is, and that's really wonderful. And I think that allows for more resilience, because it gives you more ownership of what you're doing. And then, I think there's some things from my past that I would like to see more in Web3. I think we can have more structured cultures that promote learning and teaching and mentorship. It's a very fractional environment, work environment, but that doesn't mean that it's not a core part, that every person contributing to a project, part of their job is to teach. And that is a really powerful thing to move our industry forward.
One other comment I want to add, what other industries can learn from Web3. One of the things that initially attracted me was the concept of DAOs, right? Like being in charge of my day-to-day work, right? Having more freedom and flexibility and ownership of my time. I think that's something that's always been attractive to me, but I do think we need a blend of structure, but also freedom, flexibility, and sovereignty over our time, because that's one of the things that initially attracted me to the space. So
you all just touched on a lot of really, really great things. I want to jump back to this industry needs boundaries for a second here. And, obviously you guys are all leaders in this space, and we're talking about, resilience and how you instill it in teams. How do you approach it you know, obviously we have the personal, we have the teams, and then we have the larger, you know, Web3 industry. What would you say, like, as a leader, how do you take your personal lessons and share that with your teams and help build in, like, a resiliency practice within your teams or communities?
Mission, team, individual, in that order. You know, I know there are a lot of different approaches and styles to leadership. I do not want you to bring your whole self to work. I do not want to build a family in the office. We are a band of assassins. We came here to slay. We've got some objectives to achieve. And whatever you want to do on the weekends when you're done, go forth. But I will still be online. So, you know, to that end, I guess, you know, what I really mean by that is having, you know, a shared purpose, shared ideas, shared objectives, a shared way forward means that whatever, you know, you showing up as an individual looks like can be part of that. That, you know, range of you know, individual interest and expression and capability in service of your shared focus as a team, in service of your shared mission, means that anyone can take a slice that suits them well, that is, you know, that is focused on their strengths and their areas of interest. And I think prioritizing our work, prioritizing our team, and then thinking about ourselves, you know, as individuals separately from why we come to the table and how we come to the table together, you know, I think that can and should mirror ways that we think about the Ethereum ecosystem as a whole. You know, as Ethereum, we are mission, team, individual, and I hope that, you know, we find opportunities to practice that in our own ways as well.
Well, I don't know how to follow. I mean, I feel like she really covered everything there. I will say there is a quote that stuck out to me from someone that I know. If any of you know Jesse Pollack, the creator of BaseChain, you know, one of the first things I heard him say, I joined this on-chain summer kickoff event, and he said, put the team over the individual. Stay optimistic, and remember, put the team over the individual. And that is something that stuck with me, to Evan's point. Putting the mission and the team before the individual is important. And of course, operating in a human-centric way, right? Valuing individual. Individuality, but always remembering you are working towards a greater mission and purpose, I think is essential.
Yeah, I think you struck on something that I think is really important, which is, like, always be positive. And I think a lot about, you know, when thinking about resilience as a leader, it's this consistency and this positivity. And that's not to say that you don't talk about the negative things, but I think the hard job of a leader is that you have to frame the negative things with a positive outlook and to say, okay, this is what we're learning from this. This is where the opportunity is because this happened. I think being calm and collected is a really good trait for resilience. And I've heard the analogy used, like, you have to save up the good energy from positive news to use it when there's bad news, because it's way more important to have that when there's bad news. So you kind of have to act like a dam in a drought, right? Like, you let out water when there's, like, a drought and there's nothing sustaining your team. And I think that part of leadership and building resilience is that it can't just be you building resilience. You need to coach, you need to mentor people so that they can be resilient leaders for their team. And part of that, again, is, like, giving them authority. I don't know, Evan, like, I do agree put the team before the individual, but I think there still needs to be meaningful interactions and a support network that allows you to be resilient. And I think it's, you can find that support through a mission, but everyone is different, and some people need to be able to share personal things about their lives at work and be able to be known. And I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, but obviously team, you know, is the priority and the mission of the company.
So we've talked a lot about, you know, resilience within teams and individuals, but we also have other teams that we're observing go through the same things that we are. You know, I can kick it off to all of you, but are there any teams that you guys have seen doing things with common denominators of resilience and what that looks like outside of your own experiences?
Shout out to the L2s. I feel like, you know, in the scaling roadmap of Ethereum, there has been much much evolution and much iteration. First, you know, side chains, alt L1s, L2s, roll-up stacks, shared sequencers, all of these flavors, all working toward a more perfect union of block space and applications and services. So, the, you know, just from a technical and team perspective, the way these long-standing infrastructure substrates have evolved to accommodate better developer experience, to accommodate different kinds of business needs as we have enterprise chains entering the chat. I think that's definitely, you know, something to look toward, and as a sort of a synecdoche for all of our industry and the way that we continue to evolve and iterate both, you know, in the stack and in our teams.
Yeah, well, I have to start out by just shouting out Ethereum for just doing all of this and making it to where we're at. You know, the L2s too have come a long way. You know, shout out to the Base and Base team for traveling around the world and actually meeting with builders in person. I think that's a really incredible thing. Like Evan was saying, right? Prioritizing the user, right, and the individual that's within your ecosystem. I think they're really doing that. And then there's other projects, like, you know, I recently went out to Tokyo to connect with the Doge community. The Own the Doge team, the team that owns the Doge IP, I think they're doing really amazing things. And, you know, the Doge IP has lasted for so long and kind of kicked off this trend of all the memes that we have known to love today. So shout out to the Doge team who prioritizes fun, continuing to show up and doing only good every day. The Mr. Miggles team, I've seen a lot of teams in the space that are actually newer, right, that came about during On-Chain Summer, who have just, you know, really done amazing things in the short time that they've been in existence. And so, yeah, shout out to all those teams.
Yeah, I would say just generally the team, entrepreneurs and people working in Web3 whose previous projects didn't work and who didn't leave Web3 but started another one and stayed in the industry. I think, like, the specific purpose of your company or project may not be lasting, but you believe in something bigger, and I think that's really cool.
So there's one specific part of this industry that I really want to, you know, call out and chat about during this session is, so a lot of times, you know, we have communities in this industry, and they're builders, they're developers. So we have, you know, your communities are, it's a community of developers, and so you have your DevRel teams that are within your, you know, ecosystem or teams reaching out to the builders. You know, what do we see within DevRel and, like, their role within resiliency?
So, like, in traditional business, you know, you might hear phrases like B2B, business to business, or B2C. And in crypto, we have this sort of interesting phenomena of the B2D, the business to developer, where so many, you know, components, tools, pieces of infrastructure rely on the you know, adoption of either independent developers and teams to drive traction of their tools. And so the way that we speak to and engage these folks is a little different. Like, I don't think we're going to see the KPMG team at the Barrachain rave. So understanding, you know, what it means to engage your audience in different ways is a little bit of a newly formed ground. I think, you know, culturally, we're still all observing what it is to find that type of footing. And I think the pressure that is put on the front lines of those, you know, repping the code is immense. To translate, you know, highly technical capabilities to a global audience, you know, DevRel is sort of one part sales, one part engineering, one part influencer, and one part therapist.
And a little bit of marketing in there, too.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And so the evolving demands of what that looks like means that there is no longer a job description for what developer relations, you know, is in a singular sense. It's been very cool to see the way that different teams have, you know, sort of broken this practice out, have invested in, you know, materials and experiences, those sorts of things. But at the end of the day, these are also still humans, the human part of human coordination. So there is a, yeah, I think there is an evolving opportunity for the maturity of what we call DevRel to be more closely integrated with other parts of the practice, to be able to provide feedback. I know internally on our team, for example, our teammates who are externally facing provide structured feedback to our product process such that we can hear directly from folks who we're building with how we want to change and iterate, prioritize new features and beyond. And so, you know, at risk of sounding like a broken record up here, the core, I think, of what you're asking about, again, is communication and understanding of the shared mission, the way that serves the team, and then how the individual fits in.
Sure. Yeah, I think you're totally right. Like, DevRel basically has to wear every hat. They have to be product, marketing, BD slightly, engineering, like you name it, operations. I have immense amount of respect for anyone in DevRel, and actually in some ways to the point of like reduce, as an industry as a whole in Web3, we need to reduce developer friction, and so we should all be wearing some sort of DevRel hat or think of that when we're doing our job. I think the other thing, yes, they're on the forefront, like working really hard, having to interact with customers. But the other aspect I think that's hard with DevRel is that they get kind of like an onslaught of issues that they have to deal with, but they're not necessarily empowered within their own companies to make change, right? So like the aspect of product, the aspect of engineering, or on the marketing side, they just have to relay that and deal with the kind of complaints that they're getting. And so I think there's other ways that we can think about how do we empower DevRel to be more cross-cutting across an organization so they actually can take action to find solutions to the things that customers are bringing rather than just being kind of, you know, the messengers.
I think that's really interesting. I think we have just in this industry, there's so many different pockets that are all working together again towards this greater vision. Rachel, I kind of want to have you touch a little bit more on communities and what you think communities can be doing for resilience, how they're interacting with all these different facets and like what you've seen in your experience there.
Something I think is really important is having some level of discourse with the community, right? So if you're a project, I think something that's vital that we all crave is to be a part of the narrative, to be a part of the discourse and the discussion, right? Doing Twitter spaces. I mean, I've done hundreds of Twitter spaces. I've done some with Evan before. And I think, you know, building spaces where you can foster that community connection, right? So that you're not just working in a silo, but you hear from your community, you hear what they want, and you actually know them. They're your friends or people that you show up with every day and speak to. I think that is so essential for building community, building those spaces where you can hear and have that feedback loop. I think that's essential.
Also, please use your own products. Like, I know that this is almost like kind of crazy for me to say out loud, but it is challenging to empathize with the members of your community. If you have not looked at the screens they look at, if you do not click the buttons they click, if you do not force yourself to eat the friction they have for breakfast every morning. And so I think also one of the greatest ways to show love and empathy to those individuals is to join them on the walk of their user journeys and to make that a part of your everyday practice, whether that's, you know, on the product side internally to your team, whether that's on, you know, the support side and the way that you ask and answer questions, or whether that's, you know, you hanging out with your docs trying to start from scratch, taking them literally. There are all of these conversations, all of these, you know, communication patterns and showing up for each other is really great. But if we are not working from a shared set of information, it becomes really tough to do.
Absolutely. I also love how I'm like sitting here having a next question for Evan and she's like starting to tee it up perfectly for me. It's almost like we've known each other for decades. So I want to also talk about resiliency and building products. And that was exactly for you when you sort of teed it up when you started talking about products. How do you experience, in your experience, like what are the lessons that you've learned in your resilience in building products and in different products?
The extent to which you think other people are excited about the intricate nature of your tech stack is vastly overrated. I think especially for those of us who kind of came up in protocols, there is a culture that we live in to celebrate, you know, technical complexity and detail. And, you know, some might even say that that's bordering on nerd sniping. I think about resilience and technical products as a function of the operations of the team, but also the processes that, you know, these sort of ossifying processes we talked about earlier. Specifically, very simple things, you know, the ability to communicate regularly with those who are using your product, indeed, you know, putting yourself in their shoes, as we discussed, having a meaningful ongoing communication with regards to those changes or updates that might improve. Being prepared to receive new data for the model and iterate like a good agent. But seriously, though, you know, obviously there are a lot of new technologies, new capabilities that are introduced frequently, and so the amount of self-awareness that teams, technical teams in this ecosystem need to have is like off the charts compared to centralized alternatives. when you build a modular stack, you're never going to know every character of code, right, of all of the other elements on which you rely, unless you built the hardware yourself and mined your own minerals, you're also trusting someone in that, you know, in that stack as well. This means that we need to trust the people behind these other products. This means that we need open channels of communication, whether it's, you know, the way that our team at Privado ID engages with our homies at Base, or solves problems with our colleagues at ENS, or defines collaborative ways forward with our teammates over at Consensus. The way that we build resilient products in a modular ecosystem is that we talk to each other frequently, often, rigorously, honestly. I think also the economic incentives in this space can muddy that process, can make it weird. There's a lot of political tension in Ethereum. You know, I know that that's not something we like to say out loud, but there is. And so the less we play into childish games of inclusion, exclusion, omission of information, and bullying behind the scenes in the signal chats, and the more we put sunlight on this as a disinfectant, and speak honestly with one another in the forums, I think that will be reflected in our tech stacks as well.
Right, exactly. Well, I think we're definitely not done with the panel, but that definitely deserved some snaps at least. You know, I think one of the, you know, when I'm looking at these panelists up here and the different backgrounds that you all come from and the sort of areas that you represent in the industry, it's really interesting to have these varying perspectives. And, you know, I think the next area that I want to sort of move to and touch upon is, obviously, this industry is mostly remote. There are some companies that are, you know, having or protocols that have in-person things. But when we have everybody that's remote, one, we come together for conferences like we have here. I think it's over like 12,000 attendees and over 950 side events in addition to the main conference. There is this need for human interaction, and I think that those moments also give us resiliency as an ecosystem together. But in all of your experiences from the, you know, the different sides of the industry that you come from, how do you foster, you know, resiliency within your teams, specifically around this remote work or being isolated or only getting to see people, you know, a couple times a year, running around in the chaos of conferences?
Yeah, I can take that. Well, obviously, the conferences are a big piece. You know, having those opportunities to come together and connect and do events. Also, locally, I realized there's a lot you can do in your local community. So I moved to Berkeley and realized, okay, there's a lot of people in the Bay Area that want to connect, that want to learn. You know, as far as my people in the community that I work with, I kind of go out of my way to find them, to host events together, even virtual events. That's another way, you know, you can connect with people around the world. You know, I started a Telegram group called Let's Touch Base. Shout out to our Let's Touch Base friends. And yeah, basically every day, you know, it's a place where we can go and we have this camaraderie. We, you know, talk about, you know, not only work in crypto, but like our personal goals too. And, you know, really just have this place where we foster connections and friendships. So I think really taking advantage of those virtual spaces is essential, especially if you're a team working globally, right? Having your chats, having your Twitter spaces as well. And also I've become a big proponent of creating video content as well. You know, showing my face, showing up on video, talking and putting myself out there, and connecting with the community virtually is something I've started doing a lot more of.
Yeah, I think it is a challenge. You know, I think there's a lot of positives of remote working. I think for us, it's really that we're able to recruit an incredibly diverse talent pool that we wouldn't be able to recruit if we were tied to recruiting only in like a physical location for a physical office. But I think there's a lot that comes from just like spontaneous collaboration when you're in an office together. And that's what we really need to strive to achieve when we're in this remote working environment. And I think the first thing is to talk about it, like to be honest about that with your team of like, there are downsides, let's tackle them and let's invest in opportunities for you to tackle them. Whether that's, you know, cross company, you know, Zoom, like online meetings, online events, also spending money to have in-person meetups. You know, our company, we do a retreat twice a year. And we're, you know, I think it's also kind of changing your incentive scheme so that you look at how much are people contributing to dealing with this remote working and finding this cross collaboration. So, you know, in our company, it's you know, company-wide trivia on Tuesday about people and fun facts about them. And then there's rewards at the end of a certain amount of time about like who's winning trivia. I think they're corny, but I do think that they matter, that people need to be, you know, see that leadership cares about this and is trying to tackle it.
I would say, like, so, you know, we are sitting here in this room, a function of extraordinary privilege. Not everyone and every team has the opportunity to hop on a flight and join the traveling intellectual circus at its next stop. And so it is outlandish that we would assume the opportunity to be in these extremely fortunate spaces, though it is incredible, spectacular that we are here together. And I think that, you know, if you have the privilege and opportunity to, you know, to come to the mountaintop and to visit DevCon, of course, that is the ideal. But, you know, to your point, remote experiences are also incredibly compelling. So, you know, the privilege that we have to leverage the content created at conferences like DevCon to share it among our teams, to create a common vocabulary of what we've learned and how we learned about it, I think is, you know, one thing that's always been, you know, very important to me in my practice. One thing that we've started doing at Privado ID is also every other Thursday, we do just an hour of like straight headlines and updates, feelings check-in on the week's news on chain, especially as it pertains to our work. And that can, of course, include very focused and, you know, disciplined technical approaches to, you know, papers and things that have been released of late, but also can just be a fun and joyful time to show one another dApps that we like or new interfaces that are cool or ask for help because we've somehow, you know, wound ourselves up into some, like, weird experimental shitcoin we don't know how to get out of. You know, we can recreate those moments of curiosity and learning and openness, and I think doing so, you know, by example, asking for help, showing something that you've learned, inviting other people to do so is a simple way to start.
I think those are all great. So we have a couple minutes before we're going to open it up to questions, and I sort of wanted to end this panel with, you know, we've talked about a lot of topics here, a lot of different, you know, parts of the industry. Are there any specific tools that you guys have used either personally or for your teams, or like best tips or tricks that if you had a, you know, a minute soundbite that you wanted to go off on that we didn't touch upon yet? I wanted to kind of give you guys the opportunity to talk on any of that.
So I was thinking about it last night when I was at a dinner, probably 50 people. I was looking around the room, all men, of course, and thinking about, you know, what it means to welcome people who don't look like you into a space where they are not representing the majority. What does it mean to invite resiliency when the diversity of the folks at the table is pretty imbalanced? Now, I, you know, feel incredibly fortunate in that, you know, I was first introduced to Bitcoin like 2010, 2011 by a young woman, so I never got the memo this wasn't for me. You know, just girl stuff, crypto, as you can see here up on stage. So we feel, you know, confident in this way forward, but a really cool tool that I want to give a shout out to is called SheFi. It's a curriculum created by my close friend, former colleague Maggie Love, that is used to introduce fundamental concepts of DeFi and crypto to all audiences. Today, SheFi is utilized by teams like Fidelity, teams like Avera, as an introductory set of content for those who are new to crypto, leveraging you know, examples that help both the most, you know, technical among us as well as those who may not be as familiar with these topics. And so I guess the sort of tip of the spear there is, you know, tools that are well suited to the unique experiences of your teammates exist. Discoverability is tough on chain and in the game. So also just remember, one tool you always have are your DMs on Twitter. Mine are open. Ask for help.
And by the way, she's serious. I have never met anybody that will answer more questions and be there and show up for people. So take her up on that.
Yeah, well, I think to what Evan was saying, I think prioritizing inclusivity is so important in our space. You know, tools like SheFi and you know, even Boys Club, right? Prioritizing the fun aspects, having the parties where we can all gather and, you know, connect with other women in the space, I think that's invaluable. And for me, you know, founding On-Chain Media, doing On-Chain Media Collective, what I've really prioritized is looking for places where I can actually mint my stuff on-chain. So I'm a big proponent of Zora, of Dracula, if anyone's familiar. And I think that's a really good feeling to not just, like, put my creations out there only solely on YouTube or Twitter, X, but actually having that on-chain element, right? So, you know, we're perpetuating the ethos of bringing the world on-chain. So for me, that feels really good. And yeah, we cannot underestimate the importance of education in the space too. The education-focused projects are essential. I think SheFi has just knocked it out of the park with their whole curriculum. So yeah, education-focused projects, creating on-chain media for me has been something I really love, and building more inclusive spaces.
Also, Rach, are you minting with Pods? Pods.media?
No, but I want to connect with them.
Fantastic. Lucas, shout out. We love you and your
Pods. We love you, Lucas.
I would add what's been most helpful for me is having a great co-founder who's kind of the opposite of me and thinks about things in a different way and complements me, and you know, we have very different skill sets. So I think surrounding yourself with people that complement you, I think, is really important, because it's not, you can't do it alone, and you need a team around you that helps you in your weaknesses and bolsters you in your strengths.
Really quick, rigor is a love language. Do not surround yourself all day with people who only gas you up and tell you how great you are. If someone cares deeply enough about your work to offer a disagreement, a critique, or piece of feedback, that is a gift. You say thank you.
Yes, and I think I can't quite see the clock here, but I think
20 seconds.
Great. So I think we just finished off on the official time for the panel, and we're going to open it up to some questions now. I think some of these have been a little bit touched on, but this is one. So the first question, which I think you all can see up there, is, you know, we touched on how do you build community in a remote team, which I know, Olivia, you touched on that. But we didn't really touch on time zones and differences with time zones. So if you guys have any additional answers on, you know, building community with time zones and remote stuff that you would like to add. So let's open it up to that for the first question.
So the team that, you know, we have the good fortune of working with represents a global array of individuals and therefore a broad range of time zones. You know, as with all composable stacks, you have to choose the attributes that you prefer, and you need to accommodate for the challenges that they may introduce. There are trade-offs in all things, as in our team composition, and that means if you want to have global voices at the table, you're going to have to get on Zoom at 2:00 in the morning. And you are going to have to accommodate just as much as your colleagues will have to accommodate you. I think, you know, the sort of waypoint here that, you know, that's really important to remember are, what are those moments of human connection, even if they are happening at moments that are inconvenient to your calendar? Those things can occur async. Those things can occur in, you know, moments of sharing and learning. And so devoting time and energy to them is the only way. You know, there's no perfect answer, but practice makes progress.
Yeah, and something I mentioned earlier too is time management. So time management and mastering your calendar are like essential skill sets in this space, you know, especially if you're working with a global team, making sure you're scheduling, communicating with your team, and mastering time management is absolutely like a needed thing if you're working on a global team.
I think you can work with a global team, but some time zones just don't work. Like, I think sustainably, like, I couldn't get on a Zoom every day at 2:30 in the morning. I think you have to be realistic. I think there's a certain amount of hours. It's individual. You have to decide what's right for you. But I think that you do have to design a team with that in mind. I also think you have to look at who works with whom. And so, like, people need a buddy who they work with. So you might have people that are really far away, but you have two of them, and they collaborate together. So you just have to be mindful of it. Who are the individuals? What's their role? And what will drive them forward?
All right, next question. What's the best way to encourage your team to stay current and educated on the state of the art?
All right, show of hands, how many of you have listened to a crypto podcast in the last month? Last year? All right. So it seems like we've got pretty good consensus there. I personally am a huge fan of the Chopping Block, if I were to pick one. But there are so many well-curated publications that keep us up on the tee. If you're going to subscribe to a newsletter, I think Milk Road is a really outstanding one. And if you want some savage memes and excellent crypto content, definitely smash subscribe to the Boys Club newsletter.
Yes. Something I would also say is, depending on what your purpose and your mission is, I'd say look for people that are doing the things that you want to do, people that could be kind of like leaders or examples of accomplishing the things you want to do. Follow them. I don't know. I think Twitter is for me, a place where I, you know, follow Warpcast as well, where I follow individuals that are just, you know, doing things that I want to aspire to do. I think that's a powerful tool. YouTube is a powerful tool. Podcasts. I think just immersing yourself in your specific niche, if you have one, and following those individuals that are talking about it and, you know, listening to the experts.
But also be careful if all they're doing is talking that talk. Are they an influencer being paid by a protocol to do it? So do your own research. Remember, the builders have different incentives than those that are, you know, distributing content on Twitter.
So as a leader, how to encourage people to do it? You have to do it yourself or have someone on the leadership team doing it. And I think they have to talk about that they're doing it. So one, in team meetings, talk about podcasts that you've listened to and why you found them really interesting. Second, if you don't have that space, make the space. So put a meeting on a calendar that's optional, that the whole team can come and join that meeting invite and talk about interesting things they've learned that week.
And I'm going to add on that because I'm at the same company as Olivia at Moonsong Labs. We have a weekly devs news and sharing for learnings and news. And anybody's able to attend. So it's like a non-developer, I will go sometimes too. And so if you have multiple people who are looking at, maybe I'm looking at more marketing, other people are looking at more technical stuff, other people are looking at regulation, you can kind of work together to find the areas of interest that people are researching. So I was sorry to add to that, guys. Hold on, my questions just went down. All right, love Olivia's comment about learning from failures. How do you make time from retro's learnings when there's so much pressure to move on to the next thing?
Often, early and often. Feedback is never an untimely gift. One of the things just I do personally in one-on-ones with our teams, especially, you know, when we're more talking about kind of product and design, those sort of tangible deliverables, three quick questions. What's going well? What's not going well? How can I help? And having that conversation on a regular basis, I think, you know, helps to uncover some of these challenges or points of friction. Additionally, retros are really wonderful. Obviously, everyone has different ceremonies and processes. You know, our version of Agile is going to look different than Base's version of Agile. But holding time for formal structures where people are welcome to share what is not going well or did not go well as an opportunity to do better, not a punitive measure, sounds really obvious. Sometimes challenging in practice, especially when we're stressed or especially when we expected things to go a certain way and didn't. And so the thing to remember always, I know this may not be new to you guys, but it is never you against your teammate. It is always you and your teammate against the problem.
Yeah, and I think something that you were saying earlier is that it's actually healthy to talk about the negative, to talk about the problems and how you can overcome them, right? So I think taking that time, like to what Evan was saying, to actually analyze what's working, what's not working, how can we help? Doing that as a team is very important, but also doing that as an individual is extremely important, right? Holding yourself accountable because, you know, no one really has the time to hold your hand through everything, right? Like, you're the one at the end of the day who has to look in the mirror and say, okay, what is working for me? Where am I seeing the best results? Where's my time best spent? And what things aren't exactly working, and what can I take off my plate? So I think individual accountability is very important as well.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to be like Nike here. Like, you just have to do it. Like,
you just
have to, like, find the time. I think that a lot of times in blockchain, like, crises are very time sensitive, so obviously not in the middle of a security issue do you say, like, where did we fail here? But I think that, you know, 2 weeks down, you have to go back and look at this, like, what practices, what needs to change to make sure this didn't happen.
All right, so in the spirit of putting mission/team first, what do you do when the needs of the team evolves, but team members' work isn't evolving to meet the shifting needs?
Yeah, I can jump in on that one. Obviously, every situation is different. I think a key thing is communication. So if the team member has known that their work needs to evolve, it's not meeting expectations. You need to have those conversations even when they're difficult. But I also would say that, you know, if someone, your team is only as strong as the weakest person. So if someone isn't stepping up, if someone isn't performing at the level of excellence that you need, that is a detriment to your team, and you do need to move quickly to fix that.
Yeah, teams are commitments that we make to each other. The second those commitments are not in a position where they can be honored in the same way, it warrants a conversation. And that goes both ways, whether for individuals and also, you know, the leaders who support them.
All right. I think we're going to try to get through both of these, but we're definitely going to hit this first one. What personality traits do you look at when recruiting new talent that gives you hints about resilience?
I'll comment there real quick. I would say passion and excitement. When I see that light and that spark in someone, like they are so lit up about what they're doing, I'm like, okay, they have that energy. They have that level of passion and dedication to really show up and be hungry. I look for hunger in people, people that want to show up and do the work and are excited about it. Because I think, you know, they'll have that energy and that momentum to get back up if we get knocked down. So I think passion, spark, and energy is what I look for.
Yeah, I love that. They also need to be able to talk about their failures. If you ask them what their weaknesses are or what they've learned from failures and they kind of go quiet, it's not a good sign.
I definitely think that, folks need to be able to do what they think makes sense. So, and, you know, individual sense of autonomy and comfort there. I also think that I'm big on the yes and people. If we have a conversation, we identify a task to be done. I do not want to just execute on the task. I want us to explore the idea. So the execution of the task is the start, not the end of how we act on it.
And I can't see the clock, but I think we're very close to time.
28
seconds. All right. I'm going to take the last 28 seconds we have to say thank you so much to everybody for being here, for your great questions, to our amazing panelists. Please, you know, we're going to stick around afterwards. If you have questions, you want to talk to us, we're here. Again, follow everybody on Twitter. Look at what they're doing. DM them. They will answer you. You have at Proven Authority, at Rachel on Chain, and at Livs_Smith. And thank you again. You guys have been a really, really great audience. These questions were really insightful. And happy last day of DevCon, everyone.
Woo. All right.
Thank you,
guys.
You, everybody.
See you on Chain.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.